You're here, those who are going to call in, those who are not going to call in, what you need to know, at least the first half of what we're going to say.
We have a considerable challenge for this polling trip as opposed to previous polling trips. This is the first time we're doing something after Pesach, which basically means you're coming right from a long break, vacation, many of you are going back to the United States, and that from there, from that mindset, going into Poland, which is a challenge. And that's why this session is very important, because what I'd like to try to do is to create a certain mindset for you, a certain perspective that hopefully you can maintain or work on over the next few weeks, close to 5 weeks, until we go to Poland, and then to go into the right mindset so you really can gain the most out of our trip. So let me just raise that question: is why do we choose to go after Pesach? Most of your friends are going like next week. Some of your friends went earlier in the year. But we're doing something a little different than everyone else. We're going after Pesach. And what was the thinking behind it, which I'd like to try to get to? Let the cat out of the bag. No secrets. But before I do so, I want to share with you a couple of ideas. First of all, one of my favorite stories of all time. And some of you may have heard this story. If you haven't heard this story, where have you been? Because it is one of the most popular, beloved stories that Rav Shlomo Karlebach would tell. He was Baal HaMaisa. He was actually the one who the story happened to. So, and I get very emotional when I tell this story. You know, I have to. Hopefully, we'll not get this time. I usually tell it in more emotional settings, but you know, that screen sort of helps me perspective. And that is, Shlomo was once traveling on a plane, and he noticed a stewardess on the plane. Probably wasn't the first stewardess that he had noticed in all his travels, but this particular stewardess, he really saw something very special about her. And after she was very busy tending to all the travelers, and finally when the plane reached a certain altitude, he turned the seatbelt signs off, and he goes to the back of the plane to see what's special about this stewardess. And sure enough, she's sitting there in the back of the plane, and she's this blonde, very, very attractive girl, but she's sitting there and she's davening out of a sitter. Now this is something in the 60s, 70s. Like today, you can see in El Al, you can see actually religious men and women, stewards. Everyone's stewards today, right? That's completely the correct thing. Flight attendants. Anyways, you have religious, and maybe even in the United States. I know a pilot, religious pilot, a Shomer Shabbos pilot. There are such a things today which didn't exist, you know, 30 years ago for sure. Anyways, to hear this, a religious woman who doesn't look very religious, doesn't look very Jewish even, and says, "Oh, you know, holy sister, shalom, shalom aleichem, wow, what is this? What's going on?" So she explained to him that she, ever since she was a little child, she was drawn to Judaism, and she's always looking and interested in learning, and she finally turned to an Orthodox rabbi. She went through a process of giur, of conversion. Has anyone heard this story before? Goes through a process of conversion, and whatever, she's become Jewish. So, wow, it's beautiful, amazing. And she says to him, but you know what, you're a rabbi, yes, whatever, I'm a rabbi, Shlomo Kalbach my name is. And he says, you know what, maybe you can help me, it's maybe a long shot, but happens to be that I fall in love with this wonderful man, Jewish man, who he himself has become also more religious, comes from a secular Jewish home, parents are Holocaust survivors, and they absolutely refuse that he should marry me because I'm a convert. They don't want any converts, even though they're not religious themselves. They're far from it. They're far from religion. They have no connection to religion, but they just have this bug in their head, in Israel called Juk Barosh, that they insist that their son only marries Jewish-born person. And they will refuse to accept me as a possible match for their son. So maybe, Rabbi, maybe you can possibly speak to them. Maybe I'll give you their number. You can call them and try to talk some sense and explain to them that a convert to Judaism is just as much a Jew as anybody else. Please, sure, but, you know, is there anything for you? Of course. And he takes a number. When he gets back to New York, he calls this family, and he talks to the father of her boyfriend on the phone. And the father is getting angry and angrier, and he's yelling at him. He says, "I will have nothing. I survived Auschwitz." Even though I grew up as a religious boy, but I don't believe in that stuff anymore. You know, I don't believe in God. What he did to Jewish people, I don't believe in him anymore. But there's one thing that I will not allow my son, after what I went through, I will not allow my son to marry anyone that's not Jewish. I don't care. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in this Torah. But my son has to marry a Jew. And some convert that's not Jewish in my eyes. Explain to him, but you understand? What do you mean? It's even better. This person chose to be Jewish, and they're considered Jewish. I don't care what the rabbis have to say. I don't care what you have to say. There's no way my son's marrying a guy. So he's not getting anywhere. The more he's talking, the angrier, the louder the guy's screaming. So he calls up this girl to tell her, you know, that I'm sorry, but I didn't get anywhere. I really apologize. And instead of, she didn't answer. This is before the days of cell phones. You actually called to someone's house, and her father answered the phone. And the father answered the phone and says, "What are you meddling in my daughter's life? You know, she, it's good that this other family doesn't want her to marry him. I don't want her to have anyways to do with Jews." And he says, "But what's your daughter is very special. She's a wonderful. And how can you stand in the way of love? Love is the greatest thing." And he's yelling. All of a sudden, he says, "You're a rabbi?" He says, "Yes." He says, "I want to tell you something that I've never told anyone else. But the truth is that my wife and I, we're both Holocaust survivors. We lost our entire family, and as a result, we turned our back on God, and we wanted nothing to do with Judaism. And we raised our children as Christians. And we told all our friends that we were baptized. But the truth is, we never were baptized. We never went through with it. We just pretend to be Christians, and that's how our children believe that we're Christians." And this is the irony of ironies, that my daughter converted to be a Jew, you know, when she really is a Jew, and now she wants to marry a Jew. We were trying to run right away from it, and look what's happened. So Shlomo's like, "Are you serious? It means your daughter's Jewish. Your daughter's Jewish. That means they really should have no opposition to marry their son marrying your daughter. Don't stand in the way of this. They're crazy about each other. Let me call the other." So Shlomo calls the other family back and explains the situation. He says, "You have to meet each other. You have to meet each other. Parents should come and meet. And sure enough, he gets them together in Manhattan, and the two fathers look at each other, and one says to the other, "Herschel, Yanko, no way, I thought you were dead. I can't believe this is unbelievable." They start hugging each other. The both wives are, you know, jaws dropped. The two kids can't believe what's going on here. And they're crying, hugging each other, crying. Where's that screen? So they said, "What's going on?" He says, "We were best friends growing up. The two of us best friends. I thought he didn't survive either. And I thought he didn't survive. I can't believe you're alive. I can't believe it. Because we were the greatest friends." And then one of them says, "Do you remember? Remember that pact we made with each other? That when we got older, that if I had a son, you had a daughter, or the other way around, that our kids would marry each other?" He says, "We forgot about it, but God didn't forget." Next week's parsha is Parshas Metzora. Ask someone to give you a Dvar Torah and Parshas Metzora, they start breaking out a cold sweat. Parshas Metzora, especially when you split Tazria Metzora, you know, one is about Tzara, the next one's about Tzara, you don't know where, you know, what are you going to add? But here's maybe the greatest Dvar Torah you may hear on any Parsha, but particular to Parshas Metzora, it's not this week, it's next week, but we're not going to see each other for next week. So here's one from Metzora. When you go home, those of you going back to your parents, you'll have a doozy of a Dvar Torah to share with them. But it's much bigger than just a fourth than Parshas Metzora. This teaching is actually a teaching of the Eish Kodesh. The Eish Kodesh of Klonimus Kalman Shapiro, Piazetz Nerebi, one of the most famous tragedies of the Holocaust. And we'll talk about it more when we get to Poland, but just Bekitzer, Klonimus Kalman Shapiro was a Rebbe Piazetz. Piazetz is about half hour south of Warsaw. And he had a yeshiva there called Das Moshe. Besides being a Rebbe, he's also Rosh Yeshiva. And a lot of very well-known stories about him, which were made famous by Reb Shlomo Kalibach. Those of you from the Five Towns know the Shul Eish Kodesh is also a branch of Eish Kodesh in Ramat Beit Shemesh, which is run by the great nephew of the Pizetzin Rebbe. And the Eish Kodesh is a collection, the Sefer Eish Kodesh is a collection of Divrei Torah and Divrei Chizuk that the Rebbe sent over in the Warsaw Ghetto. And it was hidden. The writings were hidden in milk canisters, these old milk canisters, big heavy metal canisters. Maybe you see them in the amusement parks, you're trying to throw a softball into them. Or some of you live outside New York, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so they in these milk canisters, they hid writings of the Eish Kodesh and other writings. It was called the Onik Shabbat Archives, led by Ringelboim, who led a number of historians who actually recorded history of what was going on in the Warsaw Ghetto at the time. And they knew that something unprecedented was happening. They wanted to record this history, and they hid these writings, historical writings, underneath the ghetto, and some of them were discovered, not all of them were discovered, but one of them was discovered with the writings of the Eish Kodesh, and was sent to Eretz Yisrael, and it was published posthumously, and that's the Sefer Eish Kodesh, unbelievable essays. So, in 1940, Parshas Metzora, the Rebbe said the following unbelievable idea. This particular part of the parsha is talking about the neged saras on a house. It says, "Ki savo el eretz Kenan asher ani nosein lechem la'chuzah, V'nasati neged tzaras b'veis eretz achuzeskan. You're going to come into Eretz Yisrael, which I've given to you as an inheritance, and you're going to find a neged tzaras in your house. Uba shelo abayis v'gid l'kohen, the one who owns the house will tell the kohen, le'mor kin nega nirli b'abayis. It appears to be a nega on my house. Rashi says that it says ki savol eretz kanan. Rashi says it's actually besura tova hilachem. It's actually good news for you, because what would happen? They would close the house off for 7 days, and then they would scrape off. If it turns out to be nega, they would scrape off the nega, this particular stain of tzaras on the wall of the house, and they would chip away at it, and they would find where that nega was. They would find actually a treasure that was hidden by the Amorite people, the Canaanite people, the indigenous people, who had hidden these treasures in the walls of their homes. And this was the way in which God would show them that they actually find, this is where they can find the treasure that was hidden in the walls. Through the tzaras, they were able to find the treasure. So it actually was good news for them. So the Rebbe asked the following very basic question, and he has a tremendously profound answer. Again, keeping in mind that he's in Warsaw Ghetto in 1940. The question was, if this in fact turned out to be a treasure, as Chazal say, then why did they have to close the house off for 7 days? Why did they declare the house tameh? You see the tzaras, great news, this is awesome, everyone's happy. Why do you have to close the house for 7 days? This is tameh. Just, you have a tzaras, right? Okay, just chip away, and you find the treasure. Why do you have to go through the whole process of tumah, of having to leave the house, closing the house off? So the Rebbe said as follows. He said, there are times in our lives when it appears as if bad things are happening, and those bad things often lead us towards God. Okay? So people sometimes, lo aleinu, they have a certain illness in the family, or something, the guy loses his job, or something that was going well for him ceased, stopped, and what happens is that as a result of this pain, this tzara, I can't think of an English word.
Distress.
He turns towards God. He says, God, I need your help. God, and he makes change in his life. I have to do tshuva. I've done something that I'm not deserving of these blessings anymore. He turns towards God. And we can see that yisur and sometimes bad things can actually bring a positive result. Because however, what we're witnessing right now doesn't make any sense to us whatsoever. There are bad things that happen to us that are lefach, that are distancing us from God. They're closing, they've closed all the mikvos. They've closed all the shuls, all the Talmidei Torahs, all the schools. These bad things are things that are making us go further from Hashem. It's not making us turn towards Hashem. If we would suffer physically, lose our jobs, okay, that's terrible. But now we can't even daven with a minyan, we can't learn Torah in public, we can't go to the mikvah. All these things that are things that are being closed, God is closing them from us. So one may think that this is something terrible and sending us in the wrong direction. That's why the Torah had to teach us this concept, this parsha, that even when there's tumah, even when the things that seem to be distancing us from Hashem, in the end, there's actually a treasure there. There's a treasure there. Yes, there's tumah here, and we have to be separated, we leave our homes,
But in the end, there's going to be a treasure. We don't see it right now, but there's going to be a treasure in the end.
The reason why, main reason why we moved the trip to after Pesach is there's a main reason and then there's a secondary reason. The main reason is because we want you to experience the deepest place of Chil Hashem, the deepest place of Tum in this world, and then to come back here to Eretz Yisrael, and then to experience and feel and understand the treasure that lay behind this terrible, terrible tragedy. There's a treasure. And that treasure is Eretz Yisrael. You're going to come back, and 2 days later is going to be Yom HaZikaron here in this country, and the day after that is going to be Yom HaAtzmaut. And we're going to experience, hopefully, again, try to, on some level, to come face to face with the greatest tragedy of the Jewish people in our history, maybe of all mankind. And then be able to go from that to also feel the price that was paid here in this country for this country, but then to be able to celebrate the treasure of God's gift to the Jewish people, known as the State of Israel. That's the idea. We've had great trips going to Poland in the past, and we may go back to that formula next year. I don't know. We'll see how it works this year. But we went to Poland, and we came after a very nice Chorev Zman, and people were into it, and people were in the right frame of mind. They went to Poland, and then came back to Eretz Yisrael. A lot of guys came back here. Everyone came back here, almost. Everybody came back, went to the Kotel, beautiful dancing at the Kotel afterwards. But then everyone went their merry way. Most people go back to the United States for Pesach, and sort of that wave that we were riding sort of fizzles out. And although, again, I don't want to take away with it. You'll ask the guys in Lansing, they'll tell you that it was a life-changing experience, and it was. And anyone who's gone to Poland and is scared of going with yeshiva, it is a tremendous, tremendously powerful experience. And you all have that. But we want to sort of ride that wave a little bit longer. And it's an experiment. We're going to see. We'll see how that works. But that was the thinking involved. To experience that treasure, to see that with all the pain and the tragedy of people turning away from God, that ultimately God runs the world. God doesn't forget His people. He doesn't forget us. Even when we've forgotten Him, and many of the people that survived did forget Him and were angry at Him, but in the end, He brought us back here and has given us another opportunity to get close to Him. Those of you who aren't going to Poland or have gone in the past, so you know we look forward to coming back on Friday. We're going to come back on a Friday morning, early Friday morning, spending Shabbos together. We're going to be in a Shabbaton in not far from the Old City, actually in the Ramat Eshkol neighborhood. We're going to dance Friday night together at the Kotel, daven at the Kotel Friday night, and then we'll spend Shabbos in the neighborhood of Ramat Eshkol. A lot of inspiring speakers, hopefully. You'll have Friday to rest up and really to take advantage of an amazing Shabbos in that community. Before I get into the technical details, there's a few more things I just want to point out to you. And that is, some of you, when you go to Poland, you will feel that a part of you will have died in Poland. You'll experience very powerful emotional experiences. There are particular places, again, Someone got, anyone else besides Dave went last year? And then Moshe went this year. So there's particular places that they'll recall in there from their experience. And Andrew was there also. They're very difficult places. Places that you'll never forget for the rest of your life. How you felt, many of you will as you know, as tough and as a giver as you think you are, you will, you know, I've seen the toughest people just lose it in certain places and certain... It's not our goal to get you to cry. It's not one of the top goals, I'd say. But say that's not the goal, but it's just some very, very powerful places and stories you're going to hear that it's hard not to be moved in a very significant way. But I think more than the feeling that you'll, like, how can I go on with my life, you're going to feel much more that those that were murdered can and will live on through us, through you. The Torah tells us, "Kabeid es avich ves imech leman yarichun yamecha." I honor your parents so that your days will be lengthened. What does it mean that your days will be lengthened? So the pashup shot is that you'll have a long life. Now, it's certainly true that's pashup shot, but there could be another meaning here, and that is leman yarichun yamecha. When you honor your parents, you honor those who came before you. You are lengthening your life, not forward, but you lengthen your life backwards. You attach yourself to the generations that came before you. And now your life takes on a much more significant role, because it's not just your life, your 80, 90 years you live, but your life is actually connected to another 80, 90 years, hundreds of years that came before you. You're connected to those generations. I'm not only living for myself. I'm an extension of the past. And I'm a part of a chain, and I can lengthen my days by having the past become a part of me. That's one of the feelings you're going to have on this trip. You're going to feel a sense of achrayus, responsibility to all those that didn't have those opportunities that you have. And I can't pass up on this. The dream of, and you're going to hear it, and you're going to hear it a few times probably. But those that perished there, and even those that survived, could not have imagined, could not have dreamed in their wildest dreams, that 7 years later, you guys will be sitting here in a classroom in Yerushalayim learning Torah, and more people learning Torah today than ever in our history. Cannot have dreamed or imagined what an opportunity we have, what a blessed generation we live in. So you're going to feel that sense of responsibility, what everything that the Nazis wanted to destroy and snuff out,